It was probably not the Cajun music. It was probably New Orleans. You see, that was my first turn on of American music, I think, more or less, was New Orleans jazz, because in 1947, I was in this private high school, the Cate School in Carpinteria, California, and a friend of mine, Bill Mellon, turned out he was from the famous Mellon family. He said one day, "Chris, do you want to go see this movie that's playing in Carpinteria? It's a little theater there. It's called New Orleans." And I said, "Well, what the heck? Yeah, sure. You know, sounds good." And so we went to see that movie. And that absolutely knocked me on my rear, as far as I can remember, because it featured Louis Armstrong, and not just him, but with the Kid Ory's Creole Band, which was really popular at that time. And they all lived in Los Angeles, you see, and they made this movie together. The movie also included Billie Holiday and Needlux Lewis, actually, the Boogie Woogie Pianist. But the New Orleans jazz is what absolutely knocked me out. I said, this is just... And then walking back to the school, I remember asking my friend, "What do they call that music that we just heard in this movie?" He said, "That's New Orleans jazz." That's my recollection of, and then I totally got involved with that. And so in, I'm not exactly sure when I first heard Cajun music. I think it could have been the Harry Smith anthology that had some, but I'm not really sure. It may have been Bob Pinson. You know, he was a big record, but that was the time I was teaching at Los Gatos High School. I think that was somewhat later. No, I must have heard about it first from the Harry Smith anthology. That came out in the early 50s, I remember, or something right. like that. And that had stuff by Joe Falcon on it, I think it did. I really liked him. I mean, I thought that was really wonderful, sort of swinging accordion music. It just flowed, you know. That was I was never too keen about all that later stuff, which the people now like, the earlier type, you know, like Dennis McGee and so on. But I was very, and then when, oh yeah, I think it was Bob Pinson who played me some records by the Hackberry Ramblers, but that was later. That was in probably in 59 or so, when I was teaching at Los Gatos, and I thought that was a lovely string band. I loved the fiddler whose name was given us Lutter and Darbone. And I think that's what made me stop in Louisiana. I'd heard about Cajun music, you know, by that time. In 62, I had definitely been aware of Cajun music, because I think it was in 61 already that I first drove through that area, because I was always driving from Houston to New Orleans. You see, in those days, I would always drive. And the first time I went was in 1960. I may have been also hearing about it by 1960, which was the first time I drove through there. And I remember stopping in Lafayette. You know, this was the old highway. There was no Highway 10 at that time. It was old Highway 90. And I just happened to stop at a gas station and asked the attendant, you know, they were still pumping your gas for you in those days. "Have you ever heard of any Cajun music?" "Oh, I don't know." He said, "You better go to Four Corners in Lafayette." There were a bunch of bars at that intersection of those highways there, of those roads. And as I remember, I went there and I finally got my nerve up going into one of the bars, and there was a really attractive girl as a bartender. And after ordering a beer, I finally asked her, "You ever heard of Cajun music?" And she just bust out laughing and saying, "Oh yeah, just the other day my boyfriend and I went dancing and got drunk, and It was right out there in Bro Bridge, just east of here. And you can't miss the place, called the Midway Club. It's on the left-hand side, a big white building. And I thought I went there the same time, but apparently not. Apparently, due to some of the writings I did later on, it was apparently at a different time, maybe a day later. But I can't really recall that I actually went there. That's when I first heard my first live Cajun band. That was either in 60 or in 61. But I couldn't tell you for sure. And that image has been embedded in my head ever since then. As I walked into that Midway Club, you know, here was the band on the left-hand side. And one guy was singing in French, in Cajun French. And then another guy sang the English lyrics, alternating, you know. I forgot exactly how it went, but, and they were singing, "If it wasn't God who made honky tonk angels," of course, I love that song. And the people dancing there, I'll just never forget. There were these huge women and tiny men going counterclockwise around the dance floor, you know. I just have that image somehow that the men were rather short and the women were rather huge. But maybe that's been a sort of a amplified fantasy since then. I'm not sure if that was really the case. But I'd never seen anything like it. You know, when they dance in a kind of a circle, it wasn't a circle, it was kind of an oval thing, you know, in front of the bandstand. That was a much longer side instead of when you get to the end and you went back the other way. And they just kept going, just doing these two steps and waltzes. But they would never do that twirly stuff at all that later people invented in the late 60s or 70s. I forgot when that was, when somebody wrote about Cajun dancing and all that bullshit, you know. but anyway, so I heard about Cajun music and I got introduced. And then, of course, Harry, I forgot at which stage Harry Auster's first LP came out of, you know, the one that had that horse drawn on the cover on his Folk Lyric label. And that was an eye-opener, you know. It just all forms into, as you get older, you know, you just lose track of, and you sort of begin to form new images that that you can't really place. And that's what happened with this material that apparently in 1962, when I ran into this radio station. I was driving back from New Orleans, I guess, towards Houston, and that's apparently where I met this little Cajun performance that I heard on the radio on KEUN in Eunice, Louisiana, when I was driving through there. And I remember taking pictures. I think I had my Leica by then, yeah. I was just enamored by the sound. It was so funky when I heard it on the radio, you know, because it was all by remote control. And when I got there, it turned out they only had one microphone that the Revon Reed, the announcer, who was a school teacher in Mamou at the time, would just flip around from in front of him. Well, maybe, no, on this occasion, they actually had two mics. He had one mic in front of him, and the musicians had it over there. That must have been because I confused him with later times that Mark Savoy, who remembered this time because it was also the day I finally met him. But I had him mixed up because I thought he had Revon had a little toilet on his desk where he was doing the announcing. In the toy toilet was stuck a big bottle of whiskey that was sticking out, and obviously contributed to the good spirits that were emanating from that radio station.
Where is this? It's not at the station.
It's on the north end of Eunice. It was called the Lakeshore Park. Lakeview Park, that's it. Lakeview Park, that was the name of it. And there, that is still a park up there, and it's now a huge dance hall, actually. They've made a big dance hall out of it. And because they gave the address, actually, most of the announcing was in French, but they said that where it was, and I looked it on my map. I guess I had a pretty good map, or I asked at a service station, and they told me where it was, you know. And I just drove up there, and I have a feeling... since obviously I didn't look like one of the natives, I was probably, I don't know if I had longish hair yet, or, but anyway. And so the gentleman in the white plantation suit, which was Paul Tate, a well-known lawyer in the area, well, he and Revon Reed were both very much involved in Cajun music because, you know, unlike many people in the upper classes, so to speak, especially Paul Tate, you probably consider in the upper classes, he was definitely interested in this music as a folk music. This is the real folk music, you know. And when he asked me, for example, do you like this Cajun music? I said, yeah, I like Layson Apshire, who I'd heard of, you know, and heard his records and so on. And he said, oh, you like the authentic Cajun music. And I said, well, I don't know. And then he said, what the one that we try to put on the air here is more the traditional Cajun music, that is of musicians who never performed in public much, you know, who were just privately enjoying themselves or playing parties or house dances and stuff like that, rather than the commercial beer halls and honky-tonks, you know, where it flourished, of course, during those days after World War II. And
do you remember specifically any of those musicians? Did you record any of them later? Or?
Well, yes, I remember meeting them, yes, of course, because, let's see, both the Thibodeau, who is the fiddler, the main fiddler, his name is... Oh, Adam Landrino. It's Adam Landrino is the fiddler. Now, he had a big, heavy-set brother, Adam, and I forgot what the other... His brother's name, he played the accordion. And those two guys, I think, went to Newport, I think that same year, or was it... Anyway, very, very close to that. And so I did run into them later. Yeah, they did play... at that radio program too, because I did go years after it, I kept going back to it, you know, and that's how I remember the whiskey bottle sticking out of the toilet, but I was missing that in this picture. I said, Mark, how come there's no toilet bowl? He said, Chris, that happened years later, that Revon Reed added that to his menagerie there. But anyway, you know how you change things in life. Let's see who else. And I had no recollection of listening to live Leo Swallow after that event. You see, it must have been on that same trip that I also met Leo Swallow. I probably stopped by and probably visited Floyd Swallow because I was really interested in these record people that were making these recordings down there. You know, that's one reason I didn't really want to get into recording Cajun music at first, because there were so many people doing it. I was much more interested in finding old records, you know, and stuff like that. And I haunted, you know, went to radio stations, but I didn't really actively hunt stuff as much as I did later, because I should have been aware of the... But I'm glad I took all those different pictures. Yeah, it gives you a pretty good idea. It's an open air thing on one side. It's kind of like a Mexican restaurant in Nayarit or something, you know, where you have pretty warm weather most year round. And I didn't even remember that I took that many pictures, you know, but I'm glad I did now. And yeah, it gives you a really good feeling for the thing, you know. And if you wanted to hear some of this, Sam Charters made actually a record that came out on Folkwave but I think he went to the station and recorded it because it has less static than it did on the radio. Somehow, I remember it was always going crackling, not constantly, but it was really annoying that you hear this crackling all the time. You know, as I say, I didn't really want to get into recording this music because there were people doing it, including Harry Auster, you know, and of course Floyd Swallow, and then Eddie Schuller in Lake Charles, and J.D. Miller down there in Crowley, and there was all kinds of them doing it, you know.